I myself am quite tolerable. Practical. Tolerable, practical magician.
Welcome to Lost Hope, a Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell podcast. I am Bubba, the gentleman with thistle brown hair, and with me is someone very respectable. Someone I like to refer to as Mr. Catfish!
Oh, as always, I love the introduction.
Everybody, if you're brand new to the podcast, we are reviewing BBC/BBC America's seven-part adaptation of Susanna Clarke's novel, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
And what I like is that even though that is in seven parts, our podcast has already had two parts before an episode's even aired here in America.
That's correct. We wanted to get the jump on everybody. And it turns out I think we are the only podcast dedicated to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, the book or the miniseries, Catfish.
In your face, suckers.
If you are listening for the first time and didn't listen to those preseason podcasts, both Catfish and I have read the books. We're going to approach this podcast where it will be spoiler-free. But just so you know, I read the book and I loved it. And Catfish, you...
I forced myself to finish reading the book out of respect for you, Bubba. And also because I know that if I did not read to the complete last page, that you would be like, well, you didn't read it all, so you don't know you missed out on something. So, yeah, my main note, as I always said, was that I was really excited when something actually happened on page like 500 and something out of 700.
You couldn't even remember the page number.
I should have tattooed it onto my forehead in reverse. So I was reminded every day. When I look in the mirror.
Okay.
I was also a little upset that
there
was a lot of what sounded like exciting things that were described very briefly in the footnotes.
Sure enough. In our podcast, as we go across these seven episodes of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, we're going to have footnotes in the podcast. So listeners, the book is famous for all its footnotes. So on this podcast, when you hear the bell.
Ooh.
That means one of us is going to be adding a footnote to our recap and review of the episode. And so, Catfish...
That's bonus material.
That is.
Great.
So, Catfish, let's get to it right off the top. We've seen the first episode, The Friends of English Magic. What is your rating out of 10 for this first part of the seven-part series?
Well... Again, my problem with the book was that I thought it was sort of deathly slow and there was not enough action.
Mm-hmm.
That was intentional. It was written as from sort of a Victorian kind of flowing way. But so I'm going to cut this some slack, even though it was a slow episode. I'm okay with the first episode being slow.
All right.
So I'm going to give it an 8 because...
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. I thought it was shot beautifully. The characters were well delineated. The blowhards were especially blowhardy.
Oh, really?
I love that. Okay. I love seeing jackasses on film. It reminds me of my friends.
Who would those be, Kat? You know what? Let's not get off track.
Okay. So... okay. Oh, wait. I'm talking about you, Bubba.
Everyone, edit that out of your mind. Okay, so 8 out of 10. So that means you liked it.
I did.
Obviously.
I did.
Okay. I am going to give this premiere episode, The Friends of English Magic, I'm going to go even higher than you, Catfish.
Whoa.
I'm going to give this 9, what I like to call triple Fs out of 10.
Triple Fs?
Yes, that's fully functional fingers. Now, at the end of the episode, Lady Pole only has 9. So, in honor of her, I'm giving this 9 triple Fs out of 10.
Okay, all right, I like it. It's more complex.
Listeners, we want this to kind of be a discussion. You to give us your feedback. We've had some great iTunes reviews and great people hitting us up on Twitter. So for these first couple episodes, we're going to get to this stuff right at the beginning. We're going to go over the iTunes reviews and some of our Twitter feedback. We got a great review from the great magical isle of Australia.
Oh, it is a magical island. And it's a 5-star review.
Thank you very much, Australia.
It says, the title is, hope the TV series is as good as this podcast.
Ooh.
Ho, ho, ho.
Well, okay.
So do I. It's by Kremen2, K-E-R-M-M-E-N-2.
Thank you, Kremen2.
He goes on to say, or she, Bubba and Catfish have created another winner of a podcast. Ooh, spoiler alert. Haven't seen the TV series yet, but I hope it's better than the book. I agree with Catfish. It's a snore fest.
The book. Yes. This is what Kremen is saying. Okay.
However, these two guys, the heroes of the Joffrey of podcast, are at it again. This time, though, Bubba liked the book a lot, and Catfish, like me, didn't like it at all. So it's going to make the podcast very interesting to see what their two different views make of the TV series. I watch it, too, just to see how they managed to make a 7-part series out of it without the scriptwriter falling asleep. Peter from Australia.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Kremen, too. Thank you very, very much.
Peter, thank you very much. And Peter, you are on my side.
He is on your side. Now, Peter is also referring to, if you haven't heard us before, we have two other podcasts here on the network. We cover HBO's adaptation of George R. R. Martin's A Song in Ice and Fire saga called Game of Thrones on HBO, and our podcast is called The Joffrey Podcast. Please go to iTunes, download it, Stitcher, download it, and check us out there. Also,
yes,
you all have heard and seen and maybe smelled that great FX show, The Strain.
Oh,
we have a podcast called Got Your Milk. Please check that out as well on iTunes, Stitcher, all your favorite podcatcher apps. We got another great review for this podcast, Lost Hope, in the U.S. iTunes store. So let me get to it real quick. It says it's a 5-star review as well. It's titled Super Duper Magical Podcast, Catfish.
Ooh,
It's by somebody with the handle T-Hustla11756. So T-Hustla.
T-Hustla.
Thank you so much. He says, this podcast is the best. Nobody else can compare when it comes to discussions about the TV show. It's a AA, amazingly awesome podcast. Thank you much, T-Hustla.
Wow. And I think I'm hoping it's going to be a AAA.
AAA.
Amazingly awesome, accurate podcast.
We are not Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell experts. That's why we had Kate Nevue from Tor.com on. We had the screenwriter on. So please check out those preseason podcasts to hear from the experts.
Now, I wish you had asked him how he was able to do this without falling asleep. That would have been a good question. Was it coffee? Was it some sort of illegal stimulants?
Dear Lord, Catfish, you just said you gave this episode an 8 out of 10 and you're beating it up already. Oh, my Lord.
I'm just backing Peter. He's on my side.
All right. So we had some great feedback on Twitter. And so I want to go to our good friends. Our whole podcasting career is based on a guy I like to call Double M.
Double M.
Matt Murdock from Podcast
Winterfell. I call him
Winterfell.
Triple M.
Triple M.
Magnificent Matt Murdock.
Amen. Matt has not read the books, but his first tweet, he said, holy crap, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell episode 1 was great. I feel for poor Norrell. Episode was funny and creepy. He goes on in a different tweet. You know, the character limit is keeping him down short a bit. He says, Thoros, there's a character on Game of Thrones, that actor appears in this program as well. On Game of Thrones, his character's name is Thoros. In this series, he's called Viniculus. He's a street magician. And Podcast Winterfell, Matt Murdock says, Thoros is much more menacing. He's better in Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell than in Game of Thrones. He gave the first episode 8 out of 10 finger part payments.
Nice. I find that interesting that he felt more sympathetic towards Mr. Norrell.
Right.
I find myself more sympathizing with Jonathan Strange because he wasn't kind of a stick in the mud.
Now, did you have a favorite character from the books?
No, I did not have a favorite. I hated them all for making me sit through it.
Oh, my Lord, folks. Yes, I'll try to stop him. Further tweets from Podcast Winterfell and Matt Murdock. I want to say that he's a musician, Matt is, and he says the score for Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell is pretty good. It reminds me of Shore's approach with odd major chords in places where you wouldn't quite expect them, often voiced with woodwinds. Matt!
Ooh,
maybe our music expert.
We mean to have him come on to break it down.
I'm going to try to have him on episode 4 or 5.
I love it.
We also got a tweet from Hamlet is Dead. That's at Hamlet is Dead on
Twitter.
Whoa,
spoiler alert.
Okay, that's for Shakespeare spoilers right there.
Yeah.
All right, so Hamlet tweets out, he says, episode 1 of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell was better than I expected. I can't wait. How can they film this book? I can't believe that they did it. Smiley face. So he also enjoyed this first episode like we did.
Also sounds like he was, on my side regarding... Well, he seemed surprised that it was as good as it was.
Okay.
Probably because he knows the source material.
Our good friend at Glenn Ewing tweeted out, and he hasn't seen the episode yet, but he listened to our first preseason podcast, and he says... He goes, with this, we're in for a lot of skip-aheads from Catfish.
Oh. Yeah, he may be surprised.
Then also, our final Twitter feedback after watching this first episode is from Sean Gregan. And that he's at HeyRef, that's H-E-Y-R-E-F, HeyRef on Twitter. And he says, you know, this episode was excellent. The casting was very good. Draw Light is comedy gold. And
oh, yeah.
Childermast is superb. More vivid than imagination. Second tweet goes on. Portrayal of Strange from the actor Bertie Cavell brings warmth and humor to the character.
Absolutely.
Scene with his pop dying is priceless. Oh, wow. Guys, listeners, if you want to give us your feedback on any of these episodes, how can they reach you on Twitter, Catfish?
They can hit me up at CJGman67.
And you guys can reach me, Bubba, on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. All right, so we haven't received any prizes from BBC or BBC America yet.
Now why is that? That doesn't seem quite fair.
They're hating. Their dark magic is what I would say.
Where else are they going to come for their podcast fans to listen?
Right.
You just told me nowhere.
Nowhere else. So, listen, BBC America, BBC reps, give us some prizes that we can give away on this podcast.
We absolutely will give them away. We've been giving away great prizes.
That's correct.
On the Joffrey podcast.
Okay, amen. Now, Catfish, let's jump into this episode.
Let's do it.
And we're going to jump in with what I want to start on.
Oh, yes.
A footnote, if that's okay. And that is, we're going to jump into what year does this take place in, Catfish? Do you remember?
I do not.
Well, there are two conflicting things I find. One says 1806, one says 1807. We're beginning a world a bit like Game of Thrones, if anybody's read that book, where magic has kind of gone from the world. Specifically, 300 years is what keeps coming
right.
up from Mr. Norell.
Right.
And so, in one day in 1434... This mythical character called the Raven King. He was a human, but the Raven King, he abandoned his kingdom in the north entirely. He rode off into the fairy realm, accompanied by his most trusted and able counselors. And so pretty much magic has been gone ever since then. And so spells and incarnations, which had worked back in the 1434, became, you know, they fell out of memory. Spells became feeble. They didn't work until people quit relying on spells to do stuff. As spells fell, even the words, you know, the incantations, you would say, were lost. And so people quit doing them. Only in libraries such as Mr. Norell's were magic still around. The only practicing magicians were left to, you know, fools and charlatans trying to scam people. So that's the
right.
setup for where we begin, the Friends of English
now,
magic.
Now, I'd like to make a quick yeah. aside here. I don't
sure.
know if I could unring the bell. It's a footnote unring to the footnote.
Let's hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. It's unringing. Is that the Raven King?
Right.
Now, what color is a raven?
A Raven King is black.
Right, okay.
You know, like
and what
crow.
Color is night?
Black, okay.
Okay, so is it possible that the Raven King went away and became the Night King
on Game,
from
of,
Game
Thrones.
Of Thrones?
Spoilers. We are spoiling everything here, everybody. Yeah, I want to unfootnote that,
You
too.
Can't, you know what they say, you can't unring that bell.
Cannot. So let's jump into this episode. Here's another thing. What does the episode start with a shot of, Catfish?
Raven.
A raven in a
cage.
So real quickly, folks, we do things on our other podcasts where we see little scenes and we say, ooh, that's foreshadowing.
Drink.
But this series, if you drank every time there was foreshadowing, you would be passed out before the first commercial break. It is foreshadowing so much, and I'm going to give you a perfect example right here in the very first scene. We see this magician. We later find out his name, a wannabe magician. His name is Mr. John Segundus, and he's breaking pipes, and he's putting them into this water, and he's reading this spell, and he's trying to put them back together. We don't find out till later, till in a carriage ride, where he has purchased a spell.
He's breaking pipes? I thought he was breaking bones.
Oh, they look like pipes.
I think they
to
were
me.
Breaking human bones.
All right. Well,
trying to knit them back together.
Well, that's right. In the carriage later. So this is a foreshadowing for later in the episode. We find out, hey, he bought this spell off a street magician in London. Who could that be, you wonder? Ha ha ha. Maybe Viniculus. About how to join things that had been separated. And so, those could be bones. I don't know. Sure.
They could be pipes.
All right.
We'll go either way.
So John Segundus, he's a very energetic young man, and we follow him out into the streets of Yorkshire. And he's going to bookstores, and we see someone watching him from the windows of various bookstores. And that person, we later find out, is Mr. Norell's manservant, Childermas. And so we follow him. He doesn't get the books he wants, and he ends up at the York Society of Magicians. And Catfish, we are about to meet. Every week, I want to, at the end of the episode, we're going to nominate the person who we think is the magician of the week. And in this York Society of Magicians, I think we meet the character I think is the greatest magician of them all. Can you tell who it is here in the York Society of Magicians, Catfish?
Well, it's hard for me to pick just one. They're all so amazing on this one. Now, who would you select as the best magician?
Well, my best magician is the leader of the York Society of Magicians. Miss Dr. Foxcastle is the character's name. And he doesn't take kindly to people trying to do magic up in here in his Society of Magicians.
Now, I knew you would like him because when I was speaking about blowhards,
wait,
reminded
what?
Me of friends, Mr. Foxcatcher was the
it's Dr. Foxcastle.
Dr. Foxcastle to you. Dr. Foxcastle was the gentleman I thought of.
You don't think...
He's a great blowhard.
What a great magician. He's my first nominee for Awesome Magician of the Week.
Okay, love it.
And you don't think... Number one, look at his great library of four books. He's got four magic books. You know, how many do you have? None, Catfish. Let's give it up for him. Then he also has this great line, which I want to quote verbatim. We turn on the closed captioning. And listeners, if you cannot understand some of these regional dialects of England, you might want to turn on the closed caption to catch some stuff.
I would say especially when it comes to Vinculus.
Yeah.
He was the one I could never understand.
Right. He's got real thick, and he speaks of a prophecy later in the episode. So you might want to turn on your closed caption.
If you want to know.
You want to understand what in the world the prophecy
foreshadowing.
Is. So Mr. Segundus, he's coming to my guy, Dr. Foxcastle, and he's like, I want to know, why is magic no longer done in England? And Dr. Foxcastle, he's sick of this already, isn't he?
No, but here's an interesting point, because we're going to hear this later on.
Okay.
He says, it is a wrong question, sir.
Thank
so this
you.
Is important, because we do hear this later on. So that's a nice bit of parallel thing that's going on.
Right. He goes, you know, listen, magicians study magic, the history of magic. They don't practice it, and he is just totally laying down some truth, some magical truth, if you would.
Because it's disreputable to actually do magic, but the study of it.
Right. You don't expect an astronomer to create stars. You don't expect a botanist to create new flowers. Hello.
Exactly.
He's just sick of it, and he will not have some disreputable, you know, anything. He will not have anything that brings disrepute on his wonderful York Society of Magicians, Catfish.
Exactly, because they're responsible.
He is just the greatest magician ever. But and so maybe I'm giving away, but he's one of my nominees for Magician of the Week.
Oh, I thought you were just going to give it to him. He's just a nominee.
No,
all
there's
right, well,
many great people, many great magicians in this episode. Later, we see Mr. Segundus trying to get more books, and somebody from the York Society of Magicians, Mr. Honeyfoot, comes up to him, and they go to a bookstore, and they pull a little scam here. This is like Ocean's 11.
It is indeed. It's like Ocean's 1811.
And so they go into this bookstore, and sure enough, the book that Mr. Segundus had reserved, somebody grabbed it away when he reserved it.
Yeah, he's very upset. And I like this guy. He's kind of a bumbling fool. But as you can tell, he's a harmless dude. And he really cares. He's really interested in finding out the answers here.
Yeah, Mr. Segundus. I really like this actor, Edward Hogg, who's playing Mr. John Segundus with his tricorn hat.
Could there be a more British name than Edward Hoggett?
No, it's Edward Hogg. He doesn't have an
Et. Oh, I thought you said Et. Hogget. Okay, fine.
That was probably me just going,
Please, be specific. Okay, so they do their scam.
They do their scam, and they find out that all these magic books that Mr. Segundus has reserved are being purchased away by Mr. Norell of Hurtfew Abbey.
Let me say this.
Yeah.
If you're going to be buying up all the books in secret,
right,
probably best not to use your real name. However, it's a nice expedient way for us to just get right to Mr. Norell.
So when you're buying books and you don't want people to know, it'd be like, Mr. Do Exist.
Well,
my name is Mr. Do Exist, and I live at Don't Visit Abbey.
Well, for example, he's not using a credit card.
No.
So there's no reason to leave your real name.
All right. So we're going to get some of our important footnotes in some dialogue here between Mr. Segundus and Mr. Honeyfoot. And that is, once again, which I talked about earlier, they're going to explain that Mr. Segundus has bought this spell from a street magician in London. Now, that's put together parts which have been separated, but that's not the important part. He's going to say this vagabond, this street magician, gave him a prophecy.
Uh-oh. Yes. So that is some foreshadowing. But what's really cool about the prophecy, and which makes us believe it,
right,
is that usually when you go to a psychic, mm-hmm, they're like, something amazing is going to happen, and it's going to happen to you. But this guy said there's going to be two great magicians. Not you.
Well, only one of them will be me?
No, none of them will be you.
Ouch! Painful. Yeah, it really hurts. Mr. Segundus has to let Mr. Honeyfoot know, yep, he didn't say it would be me.
Now, I'm not sure why Honeyfoot didn't go, me?
Right. You didn't know my name. It could be me.
Right?
He'd be like, I'm going to let you get out here, and I'll keep going to Mr. Norell's house. So they get to Hurtfew Abbey. And here is another.
Wow.
Footnote catfish. Even though this is on BBC America, and they let this episode go over an hour and 15 minutes,
uh-huh,
they still, when you stick in painful American commercials, they still had to cut some scenes. And so listeners in the UK, uncut version of this, they walk into Hurtfew Abbey, and they're led down this hallway that keeps kind of shifting back and forth,
which
is giving you a sign, maybe we're entering a bit of magic right now. But the BBC entirely cut this. It was only probably a 10-second scene at the most of them walking through this hallway and cut straight to the library.
Well, when you see it without it, I didn't notice it. We both saw that uncut version.
Right.
But I didn't notice it until you said it, so.
So, this is our first introduction here in Hurtfew Abbey's library to the character of Mr. Norell. Mm-hmm. Or, if Drawlight's introducing him, Mr. Norell.
No, it's Mr. Norell.
Roll those R's. Very good, catfish. Now, Mr. Norell is what I like to call a double D.
Double D?
He's a dour Dumbledore.
Oh, a dour Dumbledore. I refer to him as a triple M.
Triple M?
Yes. Monstrously mopey moperson.
Oh, no, that is tough. I also sometimes think he's a double G, catfish.
Double G?
He's a grumpy Gandalf.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, I'm sure the actor would be happy to be compared to those two incredible actors.
Incredible magicians. So, Mr. Norell, let's just get to it. He can be grumpy. He can be a sourpuss. He can be dour. He's in his library. These two guys, Honeyfoot and Segundus, are blown away, and they want to look at
the books. They want to look at all the books. Now, what I like is, yeah, I want to start using Mr. Norell's tactic. Like,
what do you mean by that?
Someone says, well, like, would you like to go to the movies? I'd like to say something like, yes, nothing would make me happier than to go to the movies. He's very droll. That's why he's the triple M. He says you can look at the books.
Right.
However, it's like a little kid who says you can play with my toys. Every time they touch one of them, he goes and grabs it away from them.
That is very, very true. So he's got this great library. These guys are blown away, and it gets to the important thing. Mr. Segundus's question.
Right, and he says, why is there no more magic in England? And here's where we have the repeat, because Mr. Norell says, it is the wrong question, sir.
Very good.
So, the guy's like, when am I finally going to ask the right question?
And he says he's a practical magician. I love that his manservant, Childermas, after he admits that, he's like, well done.
I'm so proud of you for fessing up.
Now, my guy, Dr. Foxcastle, back at the York Society of Magicians, he's having none of this. I even want to talk like my first nominee for Magician of the Week. He's so wonderful.
Okay, well, please go right ahead.
He's like, we're going to invite Mr. Norrell to prove his ridiculous assumption to do magic for us.
And I like it. There's a lot of chuckling here. Oh,
right. And if he can't do magic, stop disturbing our peace of mind. These guys are wonderful. And so sure enough, they go to the cathedral here in York. And this is where we're going to get, now that they've cut the scene walking to the library, our first bit of magic.
Peter and I, by the way, at this point, were like, my God, this story is moving like 12 times faster than the book. Both Peter and I are thrilled.
So they get to this abbey, but before the York Society of Magicians can walk in, the manservant Childermas shows up, and what's his deal here, Catfish?
Well, basically, he's like, it's a shaming session. He's just about to shame them.
Right. He couches it in a way which will make them all sign. He's like, listen, if my master can't do magic, he'll swear off being a magician and he'll shut up. But if he does, you swear off magic and you shut up.
And the only reason they fall for it is because too much hubris.
Right.
Because I would be like, it seems like that's an uneven bet to me. It's like I'm putting up my $10 to your $1.
Well, my boy, my nominee for Magician of the Week, Dr. Foxcastle, he signs.
Boom,
everybody
he steps
signed.
Right up.
Now, there is
Honeyfoot, my boy Honeyfoot, who could still possibly be at this point one of the two magicians.
That's right. But he signs the sheet. He says, I believe Mr. Norrell can do it, so I'm going to sign. Now, what's interesting is Mr. Segundus, he says, I do believe, but I'm not going to sign.
Now, at this point, how could there be communication from Childermas? Like, what if everyone said, no, BS, I'm not signing this? And then Childermas is like, hold on, let me call Norrell. I got to call him and let him know.
Well, do you think that Childermas is disobeying an order in that he allows John Segundus not to sign and see the magic?
You know, Childermas seems to be more in charge of things than you would imagine a manservant to be. It almost seems to me like that kind of bravado is not really in Norrell's purview. I think it's Childermas came up with the idea, let's just emasculate these suckers.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting, and that's certainly some theories people have, even who've read the books. So we're going to get to this first bit of magic where the stone statues in and reliefs here in York Cathedral come to life. What do you think of our first look at magic in the episode, Catfish?
I thought it was cool. We could talk to Triple M, Magnificent Matt Murdock. I think what helps us here is sort of I think sight-wise, it wasn't that amazing, but the cacophony of noise really helped make us feel like what it would be like.
Right. And this is another time where you might get some footnotes if you turn on your closed captioning, because these statues are telling stories of their life. Like the first statue is like, he killed her. No one saw but the stones. I saw him kill her. He murdered her. No one saw. This is a great scene in the book that they kind of have to rush through. And if you can't understand the statues, you lose it. But these statues talk some hilarious stuff. When we get to the statues of the kings start looking back and forth at each other. The statues looking back and forth at each other. And they're like, you friggin' usurper. How dare you? And of course, Dr. Foxcastle, he comes up to what is, I assume, is some sort of pope who's speaking Italian at him. It's great.
Very menacingly. That part was good.
Right, yeah. And so a lot of the magicians from the York Society of Magicians are scared. They run away. But our two boys, Honeyfoot and Segundus, they love it. They're blown away. This is what they've wanted to see.
Yeah, they're absolutely thrilled. And then we see, we go back to Mr. Norrell, and we see, we don't know whether he just hasn't had heat on or somehow he's cold because he's been doing this spell that's really hard.
Right. He collapses down into his chair after the spell. So what does that tell you about his brand of magic. It kind of takes something from him. It's not easy for him.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is true. However, I will say this.
Yeah.
Especially since it's very far away, maybe distance means nothing, but to me it seems like this is very impressive magic.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Durrell, either he didn't want to leave his library, or he's like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do it right here.
Maybe at that point he just didn't want to leave his books.
So they point out, Segundus and Honeyfoot point out, that they haven't seen magic like this once again for 3 centuries, ever since that mythical figure, the Raven King, disappeared into the fairy realm.
Right. And Childermas is like, my job is done here. Gets him out.
And we go to a commercial break as Norrell smiles. He's tired. He's collapsed, but he smiled because mm-hmm. he got it. What do you think there, Catfish?
Well, I'm interested. You know, well, let me just say this sort of a general overall thing and kind of relate it to this scene. Is what I liked about this show and what makes it kind of more interesting, I think, is because they show things kind of briefly, and you have to sort of figure some things out for yourself. So it makes you more of an active viewer,
right,
than in the
book.
That's
important.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And as we go on, you know, we'll see things and we'll be like, wait, what's going on here? And it's only later after the fact, when you think about it, then you can figure out what's going on. Especially for me, I hadn't read the book in a while, so I'm like, I think this is what's happening. But then they don't really like hold your hand, which I think is good.
Right. And that, once again, folks, it might mean that we get some things wrong. Feel free to tweet at us and correct us if we ever get any facts wrong. We're just going by what we kind of remember from the books and what the show tells us. When we come back from commercial break, we see this banner of the York Society of Magicians, which everyone should note has a raven on it, is being taken down. And sure enough, the manservant's like, you guys are done. And my boy Dr. Foxcastle is done too. That's sad.
Yeah, he is. He is. But my boy still believes. He's right. So excited.
Now, the manservant Childermas, he tells John Segundus, if you want to write about this in the London papers, about this, sure, go ahead. And he's kind of, you're not sure if Mr. Norrell would like this or not, but he wants to bring Mr. Norrell.
Well, and that's the real question, is because that's kind of what I was bringing up earlier, and then I totally lost my train of thought, so I allow you to just blather on. But
please do.
Is that it takes us really a while to figure out, and we're still never told exactly why he wants to do it. We think that it's because he wants to help the war effort, and it's not really
right
that he cares about renown. But it's still kind of unclear, because he, at each point, he kind of really needs to be pushed by somebody. He either needs to be pushed by his manservant, or he needs to be pushed by his Don King-like figure in his life.
Well, we haven't met him yet on the show. But as we leave, Mr. Honeyfoot, he's like, boy, look at what Mr. Norrell has done. He's destroyed the York Society of Magicians. He's like, if this is what the first magician's like, God help us when we meet the second one. And, of course, we cut to Jonathan Strange.
Perfect setup.
Set it up. Excellent writing, Peter Harness, a.k.a. Lost Hope Podcast guest. And so we cut across the great kingdom of England, and we go and we see that there's a church service being going on. And, of course, how do you explain to the viewer that somebody's a rapscallion, that somebody's just a troublemaker? Jonathan Strange is late to church.
Not only is he late to church, but he peeks his head in the window. And what's funny here is you imagine there's a reversal. What you imagine is going to happen is not what's going to happen. The priest, instead of scowling at him, gives him a little like, she's over there where you're looking. She's over there.
We find out that the Jonathan Strange here has a crush on Arabella. And her brother is this priest, this vicar. I'm not even sure what they're called. But I tell you, when I'm late to church, Catfish, I always sneak in the back and just sit down, be real quiet.
You don't peek through a window and check out your lady?
No. You know, I'm always sure I'll get caught, and I'm pretty sure Jonathan Strange gets caught here.
But you know what? I will say this. He doesn't seem to, like, overly rely on his charm. He doesn't seem to feel cocky about it. But he seems charming and sweet, so that, like, people aren't going to give him a hard time for things, because he's well-meaning.
Right. Now, what did you what was your first impression of this second magician, Catfish, Jonathan Strange?
Well, what's interesting is it's totally not what we expect, because it turns out, again, although he is, although he's not successful at anything, it's
right.
not because he doesn't want to be. He just hasn't figured out what he wants, and he's failed at a few things, and his family situation is not the best.
Yeah, we're going to meet them in a bit, but right now he's fallen in love with this lovely Arabella, and he kind of blows it. She doesn't want a rascal. She doesn't want a gadfly. She wants somebody who is responsible, and she's pretty much saying, you're not responsible at all. Don't even try to propose to me.
Right,
but
she's not being cruel about it, though. This
no.
is what I like. This is really, this is nice in, like, this is not what you would imagine would happen back in this day.
Right.
Right, where she's like, okay, you have money, but you needed to be doing something. I don't want you just around the house or out gambling and drinking.
But that's what he's good at.
Well, okay.
So, Jonathan Strange, we follow him, and this is my second nominee for Magician of the Magician of the Week.
Is it the guy who manages to stay alive even though he's sick and stands in front of an open window?
No. Not the Strange family manservant, Jeremy, but instead Papa Strange.
Papa Strange.
He is so good. And what I mean by magician is that he doesn't care how cold it is. He wants it cold in his office. He's got a cold heart. He wants a cold room. That is pure. He makes the scene magical, even if he doesn't do magic, Catfish.
He is a magical presence.
Wouldn't you love a father like this who's like, son, if I hear about you getting a job, I'm kicking you out of the house.
And what is nice about this, and again, I obviously don't remember some of these things from
right.
the books, especially a small scene like this, is that a scene like this without the manservant would be the kind of scene we've seen over and over again.
Right.
But throwing the manservant in, having him collapse, it adds a certain amount of black humor to it and really helps the scene.
Right. Jeremy, the manservant of the Strange family, we're going to be following him for a bit. But once again, my second nominee for Magician of the Week, Papa Strange, he just calls his son out. He's like, you've been a failure at everything, and I don't want you
right.
to be.
However, he does a little, Papa indicts himself with a little foreshadowing right here.
Oh, well, ring the bell. Let's hear
okay.
it.
Well, we're also going to ring it for foreshadowing. He shall have no assistance in finding any occupation whilst I am yet living and master in this house. Those happen to be the last words we hear him say.
Well, that's why that's a prophecy, Catfish. That's why he's my second nominee for Magician of the Week.
I like how you did that.
So, Jonathan Strange meets Arabella's brother out at the local tavern, and this looks like a fun place, doesn't it, Catfish? There's some places like this in North Hollywood that I think are fun to go drinking at.
Yeah, super fun. There's more beards in North Hollywood.
And so Jonathan, he's explaining, listen, I tried to buy in ironworks. The smell, yucky.
yeah. Let's just say that he does want to find
a
job. But he's not willing to do something that inconveniences him really in any way.
Well, he's trying
at this point because
right.
he hasn't found his vocation.
Well, he's really just trying to find a job so he can get Arabella.
Right, exactly.
Which is, gentlemen, that's the best way to a woman's heart. Get a job.
That is one way. That is one way to get to her.
So Jonathan Strange, the brother, the priest brother, leaves. Jonathan gets drunk. And when he wakes up the next morning, he's called by some other household servants there because there's been a bit of trouble down in the master's quarters in the library.
Just maybe a touch.
And sure enough, they go down there. And this is a bit of a switcheroo because I have to be honest, I didn't remember this scene from the book either.
Okay.
When they open up the door and you see manservant Jeremy passed out on the floor.
Well, they have a hard time getting the door open.
Right.
Because he's lying in front of it. And then when he pushes it, he slides on his face. Again, a nice bit of black humor,
right.
which made me really concerned because I thought, am I laughing at a dude who is dead?
Well, we're about to be laughing at a dude who's dead real soon. In that Jonathan comes up, and sure enough, his father, the great magician who gave that great prophecy, has passed.
Papa Strange.
He froze. The expression on his face froze over his books and ledgers. And then,
now, do you think he died because, like, he's got a horrible grimace on his face. Do you think he died because he stubbornly had all the windows open?
You know what? you want to go your way. And so he wanted to go his way, frozen to death. We see the funeral, and then one of my favorite hilarious scenes is Jonathan Strange looks down at his father's coffin, and then he walks away, and he's got the biggest grin on his face. He is happy.
And then we see it's great because he's reading a letter from his soon-to-be betrothed, and we do see that the manservant is shivering by the fire, so he is still alive.
Right. He's telling him, hey, we got to ride off to Cumberland where she went to. Remember, she said, you're not going to propose to me. I'm going to help my brother open a new...
Also a funny bit of humor where he's like, how long is for mourning? And then he starts with a month, 2 weeks. Then he's like, 3 days? How about 3 days? 10 minutes.
Right. So you definitely like, I'll admit that I'm naming my magicians of the week. And obviously you may have picked up on this, listeners. Jonathan Strange isn't one of my nominees for magician of the week, but he's a rogue. He's a fun guy. You like him. He was my favorite character in the books. I'm not sure because we're going to have a character coming up who may be my favorite character in the show.
Of all time.
Right.
And what's interesting is, and I think this is what people are going to find interesting, both people who read the book and people who didn't read the book, is I think these two main characters are going to grow and change in ways that I think we'll find very interesting.
But they're set up as two different people entirely.
Clearly.
One's an extrovert, one's an introvert. I would also say that I've read some thoughts and reviews online which talk about the two different types of Britain. You have the kind of stiff upper lip,
right?
British, what would you call it?
The landed gentry?
Right, the landed gentry in Mr. Norrell, who's respectable.
Right.
And then you have Miss Jonathan Strange, who is the kind of the whimsy, the...
Well, he's like new money.
Let's look down on him. So we cut to London as we see Mr. Norrell has bought a house. Their newspapers have written accounts.
He still doesn't seem very excited about it. That's the thing.
Well, he gives little smiles. Like, he hates the drawing somebody drew of him with a beard and with a pointy hat. He hates that, but he gives a little smile when it's called The Miracle of York. So he has a bit of an ego himself. But as they're riding through town, they ride by some of these unrespectable magicians, specifically Vinculus, who's got his little yellow tent and who's singing about the Raven King and just kind of doing a lot of BS, you know, a lot of smoke and mirrors, specifically in this case, feathers.
And what's interesting, though, is the look that Norrell and Vinculus give to each other and then the reaction they have afterwards is that obviously they both sort of have a feeling.
Right.
I don't know whether Norrell exactly can put his finger on it, but Vinculus has an idea what's going on, and a very strange reaction, I'm still trying to sort of puzzle it out, is Vinculus gives a very disrespectful, hawks a disrespectful loogie on the ground, like Mr. Norrell is something distasteful.
Oh, well, that's a bit. We're going to find out later on that he says, you know, all magicians lie, yours, Mr. Norrell, more than most. And so he doesn't lie. But before we get to Mr. Norrell's new residence here in London, instead, Childermas sets him up and takes him right to, and apologies, listeners, I don't know the British Parliament too well, but I assume this is the House of Commons and the House of Lords, where these people are fighting over the war effort.
Right, and when we were in London, we didn't get to go.
That would have been great to see these people fighting it out, seeing democracy in action. In this case, these two sides are kind of talking about one side is attacking the other side.
Now, I've got a little footnote, and my footnote is, even though America is supposed to be the land of democracy,
right?
I find this kind of, whenever I see anything from this news footage or whatever, I find this to be more vibrant democracy than the kind of things that go on in the House and the Senate that we have.
Well,
I love people calling each other out.
Right, but it's more like a conversation. You watch C-SPAN of the United States Congress or government, people give up and give speeches and they just last forever and there isn't really a chance to have back and forth.
Right.
In a public setting where we can see it.
Right, where it's a debate. And what I like about this is it's a debate, but ungentlemanly.
Right.
So that's what I like.
So we see that the youngish-looking member is Sir Walter Pole, and Mr. Norrell has a meeting with him. He tries to catch him, but Sir Walter is so upset about what was happening and how he was being attacked for the war effort, he puts him off, And the manservant of Sir Walter Pole comes out and says, "No, Mr. Norell, he wants you to meet him at his house." And this is Stephen Black is this manservant's name. And then we go to Sir Walter Pole's house, and we can see that Mr. Norell is kind of left waiting. He thought after what he did in York, or maybe he just thought he would be, you know, number one, the first most important thing.
And I would have thought so. If I was in power,
right,
and I thought, and I heard, and I wanted to win the war, I would be grasping at any straws. If I heard a guy was a magician, I'd be like, let's do it. Let's bring him in.
But what if, like Sir Walter Pole, you had heard he had helped housewives do laundry?
Yeah, well, you know, he says we don't need anybody to do laundry for the troops. Really? They're that well off? They couldn't use some laundry done?
Okay. And, folks, we have a very important bit of foreshadowing.
Oh.
And that is that this older woman, who I can't remember if she is Lady Pole's mother or Walter Pole's mother.
That's why I think she's the soon-to-be Lady Pole's mother.
Okay. So she's asking about fairies, because what she's heard about magic revolves around fairies. And this is important, what Mr. Norell says. He says that fairies are, he calls them mythological creatures, but then he quickly corrects himself. And he says, you know what? It's not so much that they're mythological as they do not exist the way the stories have them. They're a poisonous race. Their help is always regretted and pays a heavy price.
Uh-oh, exactly.
Foreshadowing.
And this is one of the things I was talking about where you're sort of left to figure out. So when we get to that point, we can talk about how, you know, some things in the show are not made explicit.
No.
And you get to puzzle it out after a while. And I think that helps the show.
Oh, I do
too.
Some
people may think, I wish it was clear, but I think it helps.
So as Mr. Norell is trying to convince Sir Walter Pole to, you know, recruit him for the war effort, there's a woman in the back coughing, and sure enough, that is Sir Walter Pole's betrothed, his fiancée.
Let's just call her Lady Consumption for now until they marry. Lady Consumption.
She's not doing too well, and that is obviously foreshadowing what's going to happen later in the episode. And so, but she mentions, and this is a thing, this Vinculus, who seemingly keeps coming up, she mentions him, where she says, oh, I like magicians. I went and saw Vinculus down on the name, you know, down on the street.
Right.
And she found him fascinating.
You would think he's the only magician out there, considering he's the one that everybody knows.
Right.
Now but the interesting thing about him is yeah. that while he doesn't really seem to have any magic, otherwise he wouldn't really be out there.
Right.
He seems to be, and I presume we'll find out more about him. He seems to be, I think at least, like an agent of the Raven King in some way.
Oh, that's an interesting call, Catfish. Well, it definitely seems in his later scenes that he can do magic. We keep hearing about only two magicians will come back.
Right.
But everywhere we look, it feels like there are people capable of magic.
Okay, oh, interesting. Interesting. Well, so you think he's sort of, it's kind of strange then you would think Vinculus is undercover as, he's a magician undercover as a magician for the Raven King? I'm a little confused about
well,
that.
Well, we're going to have to see. So Mr. Norell, he's told by Sir Walter Pole, magic isn't respectable, and he's just defeated. And he wants to go to his new London house, but of course, his manservant Childermas is like, no, you can't go home. You want to go read a book in your library? Tough luck, buddy. You want to go to where the action is? People spend more times at parties and soirees rather than, you know, in a library in our new house on Hanover Square. And so you've got to go to a party where you can meet these people, you can show yourself, and that's how you can help the war effort.
Yeah. And again, this shows where, in a lot of ways, I can't figure out whether Norell really wants to push this thing that hard or if he's just being more pushed by Childermas. But I don't think Childermas is doing it for himself. I think Childermas is doing it for Norell. But still, if it was left to Norell's devices, I'm not sure.
Oh, I doubt he would have ever left York in his hurt few abbey. So we get to this party, and this is why I love having the closed captions on. Catfish, I missed this when I heard it. But as Mr. Norell suffering this, you know, crowded party and all the people there. He passes people talking about dirty linen.
No, I did hear this.
Oh, you did
hear this. I did hear this when we saw the special preview. I heard him talking about it, and I did chuckle.
Right. So everybody there is at this party. They're talking about, oh, I heard of him doing all this laundry.
And then we also, did you hear this? What? We hear your new boy saying, I was just hanging out with him today.
Right.
Talking.
Right. They even said, I heard he's a Jew. So my new boy, Catfish, you were getting to it. Mr. Norell hides because he can't stand the crowds, can't stand the parties. He goes into this just side room and grabs a book. And who walks in? But my third nominee for Magician of the Week.
And who is that?
Everybody. It is a character called Mr. Draw Light. And so, Catfish.
Talk to me.
Now, I spoiled this on Twitter. But how do you know this actor who plays Draw Light on Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell?
Well, I don't recall him.
You know what I did think? What?
That looking quite like him and who could have done the role as well
who?
Would be the guy who plays Varys on Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. He sort of has a familiarity to him, and I'm sure that guy could have done it as well.
But let me say, this actor who plays Draw Light, he was in the great BBC miniseries, which was on HBO here in the States, called 5 Days, but you don't know him from that. You probably know him from one of the funniest comedy routines of all time.
Do I?
Yes, you do. How about this?
Yes?
What if I would say, like Draw Light himself, always get their attention.
Always get their attention. Oh, my goodness.
Catfish, what if I said, there's been a rape
up there? You don't need to go any further. So he is from the original office on the BBC.
Yep.
And I believe this was the episode called Training Day?
It was something like that. It was the fourth episode of the first season of the BBC's Office, the original Office, which was so funny. I never watched the American version of The Office because the BBC's was perfect and hilarious. And sure enough, this is the guy who comes in and train and who David Brent suffers with his singing.
Amazing.
And his workshopping. It's so good.
Well, and then also, you know, from that episode, not only is this scene amazing, and actually some of our viewers know, people who are viewing with their ears,
right,
is that I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I've done different workshops where you showcase material, and I have done that scene.
Have you been the corporate trainer opposite David Brent?
Are you kidding me? If you had your choice, which would you be?
You'd be David Brent, David but Brent. You watch that episode again. His deadpan, dead stares are hilarious.
Here's the thing. If you have somebody who – you need to have somebody who's a real good straight person.
Right.
It's harder to be the straight person than the joker.
It is.
If you have someone who's a super good straight person, that scene levitates. It levitates. Yeah. It's an amazing scene. But also in that same episode is a song that I downloaded to my iPad because it's so great.
Which the one? Free Love. On the Free Love Freeway.
Yes.
Okay, so we're getting away from Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, but I just love that little footnote because he was so hilarious in that episode, and now he is great on this show as Draw Light.
He is amazing.
Draw Light is pushed into this side room by a character named LaSalle's, who's a journalist. And LaSalle's is pissed off. He's like, you promised us Mr. Norrell. He's not here. We're having to entertain ourselves. Look, this poor guy's reading a book. That's
right. And he's like, listen, let me tell you how amazing Norrell is. I know the guy so much. And then he turns to, I am Mr. Norrell. Oh, hello, sir. He doesn't even take a breath, right?
No.
He doesn't even like, oh my God. He's like, Mr. Norrell.
Right. This is so great. At the end of this scene where he says, I always imagined us talking like this, having deep conversations. Draw Light here is my third nominee for Magician of the Week because he sells it. You see a magician nowadays, they have to sell it. Chris Angel could learn something from Draw Light here on how you sell it.
And I'm telling you, he was also pimping himself up when he says, I have been your John the Baptist preparing the way for you. I mean, my God.
Is that not great? That is really, really good.
Yeah, no, he is magnificent. He is magnificent.
And so but you can tell Mr. Norrell does not like this. He's like, come on. And so he gives him the great introduction that we use every episode. But Mr. Norrell is, he doesn't like parties. He's not a people person. He sneaks out and he goes, sneaks out the back door. And of course, who's waiting for him? But
there's Vinculus.
Vinculus. And this, once again, this is the turn on the closed caption part, Catfish.
Absolutely.
So do you want to read this prophecy, which is incredibly, I think, foreshadowing drink, important. And he says, I have a book, sir. Take it away, Catfish.
It's a book you won't find in your library or any other. And we all know that Norrell has the best library. It's written by the Raven King.
Whoa.
And it tells me all about you.
Ouch.
Vinculus, magician of Threadneedle Street, at your service.
And here it comes. This is an important part. He's going to let him know about the second magician.
Your coming was foretold long ago. I've been expecting you these past 20 years. Now I've come to explain your destiny to you as it is written in my book.
Oh, Mr. Norrell doesn't buy this at all.
Yeah.
He's like, you're full of crap. You're just a street, you're a charlatan.
This is the most emotional we've ever seen. So then he says, we think he's afraid.
Right.
He said, two magicians shall appear in London. The name of one shall be Fearfulness, the name of the other, Arrogance. And he gets out of it. He says to me too, he said, the first shall fear me, the second shall long to be me. The first shall bury his heart in the dark wood beneath the snow, yet still feel its ache. The second shall see his dearest possession in his enemy's hand. Both will fail. The nameless slave shall be a king in a strange land. I will return. His words, sir, not mine.
And so,
I will return.
So, have they just spoiled the entire miniseries?
It's a lot to parse out. Well, I will say this. Like most of the times when you hear something from a psychic or an oracle, it's just strange enough so that later on, no matter what happens, you can go, yeah, that's what they meant. I mean, what is the, someone, my heart will be buried underneath the wood, but I'll still ache. It's like, what? Let's just say it's odd enough so that I'm sure at the end it'll make sense, but we won't figure it out till then. But what's interesting is that to me was he says, one name shall be Fear and the other Arrogance.
Right.
And I assume that Norrell, and maybe you assume something different. I assume that Norrell was Fear just because of the way he's acting in this scene and that he's sort of a mild-mannered, bookish guy.
Right.
But we've already met Jonathan Strange.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, he did not seem arrogant at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
I think there's a chance Mr. Norrell is arrogant. You know, he was like, listen, York Society magicians, I do this, you get the hell out of York. Only me.
Well, all right. That's interesting. So I guess we'll have to figure out who is who when we get to that point.
Listeners, let us know which one of us is Fearfulness and which one of us is Arrogance. Catfish or I.
Right. Let's just say this. Is Norrell the guy who, after this scene, cried out like a baby for children mass? Is he Arrogance or is he Fear?
When I'm arrogant,
I still feel like he's Fear.
Okay. So he's about to set up his own destruction. It's always what we want causes us trouble. So Mr. Norrell, he wants Vinculus out of London, and he's like, I'm going to give you some spells to get rid of him. And of course, these are the spells that get Jonathan Strange into magic.
Right, exactly.
We're always our own downfall.
Well, that's only half of his downfall.
Correct.
The other half is coming up very soon. I don't want to spoil it.
All right. So Mr. Norrell, the one other thing outside of he wants Vinculus out of London is he wants that book. This guy says he has a book. I want it. And so he scribbles out these two spells, one to see what your enemy's doing and one to get somebody out of London. And he gives these to Childermass, a.k.a. Childermass, are you a magician? You go perform these.
Well, I think he thinks that there's strength enough in the spells that anybody can do it. But, I mean, later on we do see that those spells are easily done, but we assume that Jonathan Strange has an attitude for it that he just never discovered before.
He was too busy drinking and partying.
Well, it's like if someone was good at the ukulele. You would never know unless you just picked up the ukulele and like, oh my goodness, I'm good at the ukulele.
I got to try that, Hugo. let me get on that immediately.
So we see Vinculus again, the guy who seems to be at the center of power and is hiding out as just a very disturbing...
As a bum, right.
Yeah, he's a bum. He's a bum. He's been undercover 20 years. He does all kinds of crazy
stuff. He's stealing meat pies. He's so hungry. Yeah, he's so destitute.
So it does seem a little weird. He does seem like he's, beholden to the Raven King. Now, what I find interesting here is...
Yeah.
I don't know what Drawlight's been doing before this, but as soon as Norell comes up, he's like...
I'm all in. He's all in.
He's all in. He's just hanging around at certain times, like just waiting, reading the paper, waiting for Norell to do something.
Right. So we see Vinculus disappear as he's being watched. He sneaks
Amazing.
Up and he steals, pickpockets the two spells out of Childermas's pocket. He's like, let me have them. And we see... That Childermas is like, yeah, I haven't cast him yet. That's why you're still here. But
right,
that proves Childermas could cast a spell. Does that mean Childermas is a magician? Yes or no, Catfish?
Well, I think what it proves is that if you have the right spell, which no one has because they don't have the books, if you have the right spell and you have the power over it, that you can give it to someone else and they can do it.
All right, so let's stay. The scene cuts back and forth with Mr. Norell, but let's stay with Childermas and Vinculus for a bit. In that Childermas, he's drawn his own set of... are these tarot cards? What are these here?
They do look like they're some sort of tarot card set.
So he's like, listen, you street bum, I'm going to read your fortune based on these tarot cards. And you
They're called the Cards of Marseille.
Oh, excellent. So he turns them over slowly and he says, listen to me. For the present, you're going to be suffering. Your actions are governed by a hermit. And who is the hermit?
Norell.
Hey, here we go. You know what? You know, you've weighed your choices, and you're going to have to make a decision, and you're going on a journey. So once again, this is kind of pushing what's going to happen later.
Right. He is going to go on a journey.
All these things are set in motion by Mr. Norell. Mr. Norell is setting up Jonathan Strange his whole life.
Yeah, exactly. It's Childermas who's saying you're going on a journey to meet him. And he's like, yeah, I am going. Leading to an ordeal, perhaps even death. Well, we know what that ordeal is not so bad.
The ordeal is somebody hanging. But is that the ordeal? We'll see.
Oh, I think the ordeal is when he gets the crap beat out of him. That seems like a pretty bad ordeal to me.
But then Vinculus, he's like, oh. Yeah, that was impressive.
This is awesome.
Let me tell you your fortune, you jerk.
Oh, and then he says, no, he's going to say his. He's going to tell Norell's fortune.
Right. And so he deals out these cards. And once again, is Vinculus the Raven King? And he's just been fooling it.
Oh, I don't believe he's... that's so funny. Someone left a dirty thumbprint on my card. It's so... You're like,
it's
oh, that's
great
interesting.
Reveal.
And then he just turns him over. And he turns him over. And what's happening is each card he turns over, the thumbprint, what seems like a thumbprint, gets
bigger and bigger.
And by the time he gets to the last card, well, it turns out that wasn't a thumbprint, but it was...
The Return of the Raven King.
And he says, he is coming.
Childermas is blown away because he's like, I drew these cards myself. There's only one.
There's only one king
in the whole deck.
And Childermas says to him, the Raven King is coming. He says, is he coming during winter? Because then they can both come at the same time.
We're crossing over with Game of Thrones.
Crossing over. Game of Thrones crossover.
All the time. So back at...
Well, again, because... I only mention that because like Game of Thrones,
right.
We're sort of set up here. We think... What's going to happen is the conflict between these two magicians.
That's right. But they're both going to fail, according to this prophecy.
Yeah, but there's a bigger thing out there, and it's the Raven King.
So, Mr. Norell, he's had enough of this. He hates parties. People mocked him, even though he was trying to help the country in the war effort. He wants to move home. And these two guys, these two toadies, Drawlight and Lascelles.
And here where it comes up, he says that... Sir Walter's bride is dead, so, okay, you got over on him. That seems kind of cruel, like, okay, you hate this guy? Congratulations.
His fiance's dead.
And by the way, they set this up, I don't recall while we're reading it here, but at some point, I think we were talking over it, someone did mention that she was sick.
Yeah, she was sick. Well,
we
saw her.
We knew that she was sick, no, but that she would be dead likely within the week.
And of course, my boy Drawlight, he has to mention it. You know, he's like, guess what? She had a great dowry.
Right. Too bad he's not going to do well now because he needed that money.
Right. He's in election. £1,000 on the last election. Oh, he lost all her cash.
In the meantime, somehow, even though no one said
right,
it would be great if you could bring her back from the dead, all of a sudden Norrell gets this idea in his head and he's having a conversation with someone who is not there because he's going through the whole thing. God, it hasn't been done in a while. It's very difficult. I would never do it. Why are you asking me to do this? And Drawlight's like, Norrell.
Right. They're both like, nobody's asked you to do it.
No, I can't do it. I cannot do it.
One of the great things is Drawlight's like, oh, this woman who with her death, everyone had a tear in their eye, and they cut to LaSalle, and he's making this face like, did we? And then Drawlight, he seizes in. He's like, hey, you bring her back from the dead, it would do so much good, but of course.
That's it. They'd all come to you. I'm surprised he didn't say you won't have to go on any more parties. That's what he should have said.
Right. Then he would have immediately done it. He wouldn't have had the back and forth. He'd be like, you will never have to go to a party again.
What I like is Drawlight really pushes it. I really felt like if Drawlight would have been like, oh, you don't want to? Okay. And left, Nora would have been like, no, wait. I will. You've convinced me.
Right. Yes. It is really good. And this is, does Mr. Norrell really want to help with war effort, or does he really want to bring magic back in a respectable way?
Well, this is what we talked about earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Does he want to help the war effort?
Right.
Is he trying to promote himself? Does he want to be known as a great magician? We don't really see. It's the kind of thing where I think you have to figure it out. You have to decide for yourself.
And I think this point they bring up here, Catfish, is the point that people are going to be asking for the rest of the weeks, where Mr. Norrell says this magic is dangerous. It's dangerous to the magician, and furthermore, it's dangerous to the subject.
But Drawlight says something that you could think about later. He says, what worse fate can befall her?
Right.
Because she's dead already.
Yeah. Well, I think that was LaSalle who says that. Yeah. And Mr. Norrell, he's got a bug in his head, and he's going to do it. And he says he needs more books.
He left the bringing back people from the dead book at home.
Well, why would you bring it? You know, look, this is a small library compared to Hurtview Abbey, right?
It is dangerous.
We're going to come back, and sure enough, this is one of my favorite scenes in the entire episode.
Uh-huh. I'm excited to hear what it is. Is there another magician that comes out of it?
Here we go. That's right. Spoiler alert. His name's on the title. We need to get to know him more. So the last time we saw him, he was telling Jeremy about how he has to ride to Arabella because she had moved away.
Now, one thing that you mentioned that I forgot,
right,
that Peter probably remembered too.
Okay, let's hear it.
Was that what's good about this is that Jonathan Strange comes in much sooner in the show than he did in the books.
Oh, yes.
Very necessary. Also to give us kind of he's a breath of fresh air.
Right.
There's the stuffiness in of Norrell and the dirtiness of London. And then it's like, oh, we're out in the country and this guy's more freewheeling and fun.
If this were more true to the books, I think Jonathan Strange wouldn't even be in this first episode.
Yeah, that could not have happened. So now he's excited, right? He's got a very jaunty hat on. He's like, the first thing he did was buy a jaunty hat. I need a jaunty hat.
He's like, I can't wait to tell about – this is a funny joke. He's like, I can't wait to tell Arabella about my time out here with the common man and his manservant, Jeremy. He's like, well, there's some common man trying to beat up another common man. And so he says, get me a stick. And, of course, this sets him up looking exactly like the tarot card or the card of
– Marseille.
Yes, excellent. And who is underneath the hedge? Who are the common folk upset about this vagabond?
Vinculus. And now, again, what's interesting is Vinculus is so threatening, but a lot of it seems like he acts so weird that it's just like, it's bizarre. He's like one of those crazy homeless people that's like doing something on the street and you give them a wide berth.
And so he starts telling his prophecy again, and he goes up to Mr. Norrell. And he's like, I've been walking 3 days westward in search of a man destined to become a great magician due to certain mystical signs. I can see that it's you. Two magicians shall appear in England. The first shall fear me. The second shall long to behold me. The first shall be governed by thieves and murderers. The second shall conspire at his own destruction.
Right? And Strange is like, I don't want to be either one of those guys. Why would I want to be either one of those guys?
But he was chosen long ago, and we know who did the choosing.
Now, what's nice is, and again, this is another weird thing about Vinculus. Vinculus, who was part of his destiny, was to come out here
right.
and make Strange the Other Magician, is like, well, you got to give me some cash for this, right? It may be destiny, but I still needs to get paid.
Right. And I love it. This is just light whimsy. You know, people don't like, or sometimes people don't like the saying of this is Harry Potter for adults. But this whimsy, this adults where the, like the lords come out and like, who gave this bum money? He's like, I'm not a bum. See, I'm a retailer. I'm selling spells.
Cash.
And they're like, who gave this bum money? And Jonathan Strange's like, let's exit stage left. Hey.
So now what's interesting about this next scene? So then we see him back with his lady.
Oh, and lovely Arabella.
Yeah. And he's still.
Oh. Who is this actress in real life? Who is she partnered with? Who is her man in real life? Catfish.
Wait, is this, this isn't Sherlock's girl, is it?
No, not Benedict Cumberbatch. No, in real life. Maybe this will be a clue.
This is Gotham's reckoning.
That was a terrible impersonation of Bane.
Oh, really?
Edit.
He's disavowed that. No, he came out and said, yes, okay, not important.
All right. So, sure enough, Arabella is still like, you hate it. You're bragging that you're going to be, you know, you're going to run the farm. You always hated farming, Jonathan. What's going on?
And he's like, I'll do anything.
Look, I'll do anything. I'll be a magician.
Right? And oh, hey, by the way, I got some spells,
okay? And he's like, if I become a magician, you'll finally settle down with me. Gentlemen, this might be the worst proposal ever.
Listen, but I still like his spirit, right? That's what I love about him. He's like, look, all right, well, how about this? Give me this a shot. If I do this, again, it's one of those bets
right.
that like seems really uneven, but people buy into it.
Right.
It's like basically, look, if I can make this work, you'll marry me. Otherwise, well, I'll figure something else out.
All right. So this spell, everybody try it at home. You need some dead things. Jonathan Strange uses dead flowers, and you need a mirror. You circle the mirror, then you cross it.
Right.
And then you will see what your enemies are doing. And sure enough, Jonathan Strange, without studying in books like Mr. Norrell, without really even giving it any thought, he reads the spell and he can do it.
Strange, right? Now, it's interesting that what would have happened if he'd taken the other spell? This would have been a really short book.
Well, who would he have kicked out of London?
Right.
But sure enough, I love this effect because they can see themselves in the mirror, but kind of anything behind them, they instead see into Mr. Norrell's London library.
And what's interesting is later on, you know, when he meets Norrell, we don't know whether he's going to recognize it or not. But who else is looking into the mirror?
Right.
So I guess we'll get to that point later on. It's a little difficult to, I don't want to spoil too much.
No.
But Bubba and I had a chance to see the first two episodes.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Catfish, this is him seeing his enemy. What can people who haven't read the books, who are just watching the show, what can they take from this? That the title is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. It's not Jonathan Strange versus Mr. Norrell.
Also, what's interesting is and I want to repeat it, I'll do a different emphasis. It's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, not Mr. Norrell and Jonathan Strange. And so what's interesting is even though he's billed first,
right,
he's not the person who starts the action of the story. As you talked about, right. It's Mr. Norrell does a bunch of stuff, and he's about to do something that's really going to kick things into gear.
Well, he talked about it can be dangerous for the magician and the subject.
Right.
And so, sure enough, do you sometimes think of that Stephen King? What was the Stephen King book about the he's like, sometimes dead is better.
Oh, that's Pet Sematary.
Pet Sematary.
Fred Gwynne's great, great acting job. So what I like here that's interesting is, again, they set this up perfectly.
Yeah.
That's a perfect foreshadowing where he says, you'll see your enemy. And so when we see Mr. Norrell, we're like, oh, wow, okay, they're going to be enemies. I mean, we get that a little bit too from Vinculus. Well, we don't really get that they'll be enemies from Vinculus. We just get to the idea that they'll be different.
But right.
So now, before they've even met, we have that seed planted.
Correct.
That these guys are going to come into conflict, and so that's going to be interesting because we get to see them meet and develop their relationship before that conflict is going to occur.
Now, do you like what Lascelles, the journalist, says here? As he says, you know, I have it in mind to write a play about this sorry affair. I'll call it "Tis Pity She's a Corpse."
Yeah, well,
that's a good play.
Hey. I'm not sure whether he's a journalist or just a headline writer.
But Draw Light, my boy, my third nominee for Magician of the Week, he liked it. And they, of course, had to go with him.
That's the thing. They're just hanging out. It's like they had a life, and now their life is just waiting around.
Well, should this, instead of being called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, should this have been called Entourage? Because they are part of Mr. Norrell's Entourage.
Well, like it was Ocean's 1811. It should be called Entourage 1806.
All right. So here we go.
So he's lighting the candles. Now, we don't know. We've seen him do magic before.
Right.
Okay. So if you haven't read the book or you don't know anything, what happens is interesting is that, and I love this effect.
The sound effect or everything?
I love the sound effect.
Because it sounds like the door's opening.
I love the way the camera is sort of
right.
A little wobbly, a little awkward. So it gives you the idea that we're sort of, that although we're in this world, that we're sort of, it almost feels like if someone came in, they wouldn't see any of this.
Correct.
You know what I mean? It's like they're sort of out of time.
All right. So Catfish, let's get to it. I said in one of our pre-show podcasts, this is the one thing that didn't match my vision from the books. That is this character known as the Gentleman with thistle down hair.
Because he looks like Sting in Dune?
He looks like Sting in Dune.
He's a combination of Sting and Brad Dourif in Dune, I think.
So what do you think of the look of this Gentleman with thistle down hair?
I like it. I find it interesting. I love this character. And this is one of the things that, again, and I'm slow, so this is good because I'll be behind people who watch it.
Sure.
It honestly wasn't until much later that I realized that this was one of the fairies we were talking about.
The poisonous race.
The poisonous race of fairies. So I did not know who this was. And so what happened is, for some reason, Mr. Norrell has decided, even though he knows it's dangerous to do,
right,
and he's mentioned how poisonous the fairies are, the only way he can bring this woman back is to invoke a fairy.
This unrespectable magic that he's always been against.
And it's also not like this guy, you know, he's not like, you know, you see Portraits of the Devil who's like charming. Right. This guy's clearly not, you know what I mean? He's not trying to sucker or give an idea that he's nicer than he is.
You know, sometimes I, at this stage in my life, have one eyebrow that's completely out of whack.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting here is maybe I should speak to the other one, the other magician.
And Norrell's like, who? There is no other magician. It's just me.
Even though he's heard already.
Right. But this guy says, this gentleman with thistle down hair, he says, Norrell, it's your dearest friend. Norrell's like, I don't have any friends. And so we've heard one, you know, we've had this magic say that, to Strange, that Norrell is his biggest enemy. But here, this gentleman with thistle down hair is telling Norrell, he's your best friend. Intriguing.
So even though he's heard all of this, and the fairy says, I need a new companion.
Right.
Norrell's still like,
do you think this is F date, fairy date? Is he swiping right to take Lady Pole here?
Fairy Tinder. Finder.
Finder. It's Finder, fairy Tinder. Hell yeah.
So what I love is all this weird stuff. Now, this is interesting, again, but like the devil, never make a deal with a fairy.
No.
Be very clear.
No.
He says he wants half her life. Ooh. And of course, I'm thinking, like Norrell is thinking, well, I don't need to tell anybody this, but okay, she's not going to make it to 80. She'll make it to 50, right? And that's not so bad. I don't need to explain
it
to anyone.
So Norrell completely lies. He's like, oh, you want half her life? Well, she may live to be
75. She's 19 now.
No,
that's fine.
No. He says Norrell is really hedging his bets. He's like, well, she might live till she's 94 time period. Come on.
All right. So 75 years. Right.
So yeah. Mr. Norrell is really hedging it. He's like, yeah, you can have that later half.
Exactly, half of which belongs to me. And Norrell, he, at this point, even though he doesn't seem to be pushing it, this is his fatal mistake, right?
Well, it's a deal with the devil, just like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a horrible mistake, which later on, you could just tell he is going to regret, and we'll see. This is going to put him in an awkward position.
Well, we don't see anything other than his horrified look after she's brought back.
Right. Now, he says he's going to take one thing, and I would be like, okay, wait, half the years and one thing? But I guess that's okay, because like you, I was thinking, or like Norrell, fine, she makes it to 50. Okay, that's a good deal.
Now, Catfish, what would you be willing to give up a pinky if you would be brought back from the dead?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't even hesitate. You're like, yeah, let's do this. Take my pinky.
Better be dead or a pinky? You could have a whole hand for me to come back to life. I mean, what the hell?
Oh, my goodness. So, suddenly, the people outside hear a scream. They rush in. Sir Walter Pole is like, what have you done? When suddenly there's a big inhale and his wife sits up. Emma Pole is alive again, Catfish.
Wow.
And here we go, my third nominee. Draw light. He needs to run out into the street and talk about, he's done it. He's brought her back to life. The magician of Hanover Square. Hell yeah. And she's not only back to life. She's back on Dancing with the Dead. She wants to do this. She's excited.
Yeah. Now her finger is, it's not a nub. It's like cleanly straight cut off.
Yeah.
Strange.
Yeah. They would never have seen anything like this in surgery back then. There's no way you could lose a finger like that and have it be that clean.
Yeah, so he's pimping it up. So there it is. So this starts it off, and again, right. I don't want to get too far ahead. We already sort of, you know, indicated that maybe this deal wasn't exactly
tell this from the very last shot, Catfish. The shot is we're looking into the carriage, and Norrell is just looking like, oh, fuck, what have I done?
Yeah, he just kept going on with it, though.
Yeah, and so that's it. That's the Friends of English Magic, Catfish. You didn't like the books, but you liked this first episode. What is your kind of overall closing thoughts?
Well, I mean, there again, if you sit and think about it, there's nothing that they're beating you over the head with. But if you think about all the things that happened,
right.
You know, we have the background for Mr. Norrell. You could kind of puzzle out what his intentions are.
Right.
Whatever his intentions are, he's done something that he's going to come to regret. Jonathan Strange has a career now, and we'll see how dedicated he is to that. But, you know, not to spoil too much, but again, it's sort of the deal that Mr. Norrell has made is going to dominate.
Do they call it a Faustian bargain? What do they call it?
They do. Yeah. They do. Excellent job.
I wanted to pronounce one thing right. So
good, you got it.
So, okay, at the end of every episode, we're going to go over our Magician of the Week. You heard my three nominees,
wow.
Catfish. You get your nominees and your people. So once again, my nominees were Dr. Foxcastle, who was the president of the Learned Society of York Magicians. We also had Papa Strange, Jonathan
right.
Strange, his father. And, of course, the greatest Michael Buffer hype man known to the world, Drawlight. And so for this first episode, I have to give it to the best magic was practiced by Papa Strange. He said, as long as I'm alive and in this house,
uh-huh.
do my ways. And sure enough, his prophecy came true. He was stone cold, literally. Papa Strange, my Magician of the Week.
Wow, that's a great.
I had three tough nominees, but they were all good.
Great.
All good.
That is great. Well, I'm hopefully not going to belabor this point over and over again. I've done a little bit on this episode, but I'll probably stop.
Sure.
My Magician of the Week is Peter Harness.
Peter Harness,
yes,
the screenwriter.
For making this story that I found very boring, interesting, and fascinating.
Oh.
So he's to turn what did not thrill me into something that I'm captivated by is magical. So he's my Magician of the Week.
Thank you so much.
And also, yeah. I'm not going to say I gave him no extra favors because he came on the podcast.
Give him some.
Okay, then he's my extra special Magician of the Week.
Okay, very good. BBC America, BBC, get us some goodies that we can give away, darn it. Listeners, please tweet us your Magician of the Week. You can tweet hashtag Lost Hope Podcast, or you can tweet at us. My name's Bubba. You can tweet at me, at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim. Fitton Trim on Twitter.
And I'm Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67. That's your 67th favorite G-Man.
Heck.
CJGman.
Heck, yeah. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, please listen to our Joffrey of Podcasts. If you like FX's The Strain, download Got Your Milk, our Strain podcast. And please help spread the word about this great show, about this okay podcast. Let everybody know about it. And once again, if you've not read the books, you can even tweet your predictions to us. I know there's a lot of foreshadowing, and you may get some things right
because it's
so well in this first episode. But we want to hear your thoughts. We want this, once again, to be a discussion.
Well, what I'm also looking forward to is, and I saw it's part of an interview, sorry, not your interview.
What?
That some of the items from the footnotes are being inserted into the series, which is what's making it interesting.
Oh, brother. Okay.
Okay, that's it. No more.
No mas. So be sure to download, subscribe, help us out, give us iTunes reviews. You'll see us in
Lost Hope.